for that is. The economics of cyclo-husbandry, said Dunnel Dean, are a credit to their morality. Don't joke, said Johnny. The object in his head is an alloy called bronze. It is not magnetic, worse luck. It would have to be operated out. It can't be pulled out with a magnet. Dr. McKendrick now had the brain laid bare. With a surgeon's skill, he was parting things that looked like cords. And there it was. It was shaped like two half-circles, back to back, and the circles were slightly closed, each one around a separate cord. I think these are nerves, said McKendrick. We will know shortly. He was dedicatedly pulling the objects off the cords. He wiped the green blood off it and put it on the table. Don't touch any of this, said McKendrick. Autopsies can be deadly. Johnny looked at the thing. It was a dull yellow. It was about half an inch across at its widest point. Angus picked it up with a tweezer and put it on the analysis machine plate.
It's not hollow, he said. It's just solid, just a piece of metal.
McKendrick had a little box with wires and clips on it. It had a small fuel cartridge in it to generate electricity. But before he connected anything with his gloved hands, he was distracted by the character of these cords in the head. It was a brain, but it was vastly different from a human brain. He cut off a small cord end and a slice of skin from the cadaver's paw and went over to an old makeshift microscope. He made a slide from a thin specimen and looked into the eyepiece. McKendrick whistled in surprise. A cyclo isn't made of cells. I don't know their metabolism, but their structure isn't cellular. Viral. Yes, viral. He turned to Johnny. You know, big as a cyclo is, his basic structure seems to be clumps of viruses. He saw Johnny looking at him askance and added, purely academic interest. It does mean, however, that their bodies probably hold together much tighter and have a greater density. Probably of no interest to you. Well, let's get to work on these cords. He attached one clip to the end of a cord in the brain and grounded the other on an arm and, watching a meter, measured the resistance of the cord to electrical flow. When he had determined that, he stood back and touched a button to send electricity through the cord. The others felt their hair rise. The cyclo-cadaver moved its left foot. Good, said McKendrick. Nerves. There is no rigor mortis in these bodies and they are still flexible. I have found the nerve that relays walk commands. He put a little tag on the nerve. He had marked the places from which they had removed the metal with a spot of dye on each of the two nerves involved with it, but he wasn't checking those yet. His spectators were quite horrified to see, as McKendrick identified nerves with tags, a cyclo-cadaver that moved its claws, clenched the remains of its jaw, moved an ear, and lolled out its tongue, one after the other, as various nerves were given an electrical jolt. McKendrick saw the reaction. Nothing new in this. Just electrical impulses approximating brain commands. Some man-scientist did this maybe 1,300 years ago and thought he'd found the secret of all thought and made up a cult about it called psychology. Forgotten now. It wasn't the secret of thought. It was just the mechanics of bodies. They started with frogs. I'm cataloging this body's communication channels, that's all. But it was very weird. The depths of superstition stirred in them as they saw a corpse move and breathe, and saw, for a couple of pumps, its heartbeat. McKendrick's gloved hands were slimy with green blood, but he moved in a very efficient and businesslike fashion until he had more than 50 little tags clipped to the nerve cords. Now for the answer, said McKendrick. He sent pulses through the two nerves to which the bronze item had been attached. It was difficult work. The room was cold. The corpse stank, having gone even mustier than the common rank smell of a cyclo. McKendrick stood up a little tired. I'm sorry to say that I don't think that piece of metal would cause any of these monsters to commit suicide, but I can make a pretty good guess now as to what it does do. He pointed to his tags.
taste and sexual impulses branch off from that one as near as I can tell. Emotion and action branch off from the other one there. This metal clip was installed when it was an infant. See the faint ancient scars in this side of the skull? At that time, the bones would be soft and would heal fast.
And what does it do?
Said Angus. My guess, said McKendrick, is that it short-circuits pleasure with action. Maybe they did it to make a cyclo happy only when he was working. But, and I can't tell fully unless I dissect a lot of these nerves further down, I think its actual effect was to make a cyclo enjoy cruel action. Suddenly, Johnny recalled an expression of Turl's. He had seen him do something cruel and heard him mutter, "Delicious." The effort, said McKendrick, to make them industrious, I think, was miscalculated by their ancient metal specialists, and they made a race of true monsters. Everyone agreed with that.
That wouldn't make them commit suicide to protect technology, said Robert the Fox. You got another corpse here. He was an assistant mine manager by his papers, and got twice the pay of the one you just did. Get him on the table, man.
McKendrick got another table. He would have to picto-record and sketch the work he had just done. They put the mammoth head of the second one on the machine. They had the setting now. And they looked into the dead brain of one who had been called Blow. And Johnny, who had been getting despondent, gruesome as this job was, suddenly smiled. There were two pieces of metal in this one's head. The whirr flap of the machine took the recording, and he rushed out to tear through the analysis code books. There it was, bright and clear. Silver. When he re-entered the room, McKendrick, being practiced now, had the brain stripped down. He was spot-dying the connections of the second bit of metal before he took it out. It was about 3/4 of an inch long. The lack of oxygen in a cyclo bloodstream had left it gleamingly bright. It was a cylinder. The nubs on each end were insulated from the silver. Angus put it on the machine, and it was hollow. Johnny made him adjust the equipment even more finely. There was a filament of some sort inside that cylinder. They surmised they would find them in other executive corpses, so when McKendrick had sterilized it, Johnny cut it in half very delicately. The inside of it resembled a component in remote controls, but it was not a radio. "I haven't identified these nerves," said McKendrick, "because I can't tell exactly what they go to right now. But I'll work on it."
"Could it be a thought wavelength vibrator?" asked Johnny.
"A difference measurer," said Angus. "Like difference of thought waves of another race?"
Johnny would let them go on working on it, but he had a very good idea it was designed to release an impulse under certain conditions, and that that impulse could cause attack and suicide.
"There's only one thing wrong," said McKendrick. "It was put in an infant. Getting it out of the head of a live adult cyclo through all these bones would be a task one could never guarantee the success of."
Then he saw the look of disappointment on their faces.
"But I'll try, I'll try."
He didn't think it could be done. And he only had 4 cyclos, and they looked like they were dying. Chapter 19 1 Brown Limper Staffer chaired the council meeting in a black mood. There they sat before the raised platform in the Capitol room, wrangling, wrangling, wrangling. Disputing him, the senior councilman of the planet, objecting to his measures. That black fellow from Africa, that yellow creature from Asia, that tan idiot from South America, that dull, bull-headed brute from Europe. Ugh, and ugh. Didn't they realize he was doing the very best thing that could be done for man? And wasn't he, Brown Limper Staffer, now representing 5 tribes since the Brigantes had come, and he was indeed Senior Mayor America? They were disputing the cost and contract terms of hiring the Brigantes. Of all things. The planet needed a defense force, and these clauses that he had so painstakingly sorted out, spending his valuable time hour after hour with that General Smith, were all necessary. Senior Mayor Africa was challenging the pay. He was saying that 100 credits per Brigante per day was excessive, that even council members only got 5 credits a day, and that if they spread credits around this way, they would make them worthless. Wrangle, 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 taking up picky and unimportant points. Brown Limper had been making good progress. He had the council whittled down to 5 now, but it certainly looked like 4 too many. He cudgeled his brains as to how to solve this dilemma. Driven by Lars out to the Brigante suburb of the city that day, it is true he had been taken a bit aback by what the Brigante women were doing, right in the street and with no clothes on at any time. But General Smith, during their conference, had said they were just frolicking. Coming back, Lars had been talking about that wonderful, wonderful military leader of ancient times named... Bitter? No. Hitler? Yes, Hitler. How he had been a champion of racial purity and moral uprightness. Racial purity didn't seem very interesting, but moral uprightness had caught Brown Limper's attention. His father had always been a champion of it. Sitting there, listening to these endless arguments and objections, he recalled a conversation, purely social, he had had with that friendly creature Turl. It had been on the subject of leverage. If one had leverage, one could do pretty well what he pleased. Sound philosophy. Brown Limper had grasped that. He truly hoped Turl thought him an apt pupil, for he was very happy to have his friendship and help. He sure didn't have any leverage on this council. He tried to think of some way he could maneuver them into appointing himself and a secretary as the sole authority for the planet. He couldn't quite come up with anything, and he pondered other things Turl had said. Good, down-to-earth advice. Something about it being the right thing to do to pass a law and then arrest the violators or use their violations as leverage. Something like that. It came to him in a flash. He rapped for silence. "We will table the resolution to accept the Brigante contract for now," said Brown Limper, in his best voice of authority. They quieted down, and Asia folded his robes with a gesture of what was that? Defiance? Well, he'd take care of him. "I have another measure," said Brown Limper. "It has to do with morality." And he proceeded to make a speech about morality being the backbone of all societies, and that officials must be honest and true, and that their conduct must be beyond reproach, and that they must not be discovered in any scandalous situations or circumstances. It went down rather well. They were all reasonably honest men, and they saw that official conduct should also be moral, even though their different moral codes varied. They unanimously passed the offered resolution that scandalous official conduct should result in removal from post of any offender. They felt very upright about it. At least they had gotten one resolution passed. They adjourned. Back in his office, Brown Limper reviewed some data with Lars about button cameras. Lars had some knowledge of them. Yes, he thought Turl could tell him where some were in the compound. The following morning, when all the officials were out of their rooms at the hotel, Lars, in the name of decency, put some button cameras in unsuspected places in rooms and connected them to automatic picto recorders. The following night, Brown Limper had a very confidential meeting with General Sniff. As a result, a dozen of the better-looking Brigante women were employed at the hotel in various capacities by the manager, who was short of help and who agreed that such good-looking women should be in posts that directly contacted his guests to make their stay more comfortable. The evening after that, Turl thought Brown's measures were very wise and said he was proud of him to have thought of it all on his own. Brown Limper was very pleased, and he went back to his office to work late at night assembling the steps of his plans. Notable among them were charges to bring against Johnny Goodboy Tyler when Brown Limper at last had a free hand. The list of charges was getting pretty long, and punishment was overdue.